Are there any musicians in particular who inspired you to approach your instrument differently?
It's hard to say. I think the people that have inspired me of late are not so much guitar players. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly guitar players had a big influence early on, but a lot of horn players, and so I listen to a lot of saxophone players, for instance, and I transcribe a lot of that stuff and try to play some of those lines on the guitar. So different instruments, trumpet players. I've been playing. Randy Brecker's been kind of gigging with me sometimes and doing my music with me, which I'm certainly honored by, you know. Yeah. And to hear him play every night and try to get some of that phrasing. Of course, when I was playing with Miles, that was a big influence. And just to hear that kind of singing sound that a horn comes with naturally, you know. And I try to get those kind of lines on the guitar. And also some piano, which I don't work that much with piano players, but I love the instrument, so I check it out all the time.
Anyone you haven't worked with that you'd like to?
Yeah, like Herbie Hancock or Chick. I've done a little bit with Herbie on a Michael Brecker record, and that was fun. And then we did some kind of thing where the Miles was inducted into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I was included in that, and we did just a 5-minute thing. Wasn't really playing, but anything with Herbie's amazing. Yeah. But with Chick, I've never played, and I'd love to do something like that. Those are two guys that come to mind, but there's a ton of others. I mean, not so well known, maybe, that are amazing, you know, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of different things. I'm loving playing with D.D.A. Lockwood.
It's amazing. Really, I was thinking that.
It's really fresh. It's really amazing. With
and
violin.
He's also got that rock vibe, you know. He's
can
like
do
everything.
All,
you know?
He can do everything. He's an amazing classical player, of course. He's a virtuoso, but he can swing his ass off. He's got great bebop lines, Stefan Grappelli type kind of things, but then much more modern and with a lot of effects and stuff. He can do all that stuff, and he's fun as hell to work with.
Yeah.
Very inspiring.
Yeah, but I'm sure you seem very playful also when you perform.
I like to have fun doing
exactly,
it.
Yeah.
I got to have fun doing it.
I was wondering if you have any current technical or spiritual or creative challenges that you're working on.
Oh, there's tons. I mean, I feel like it's more all the time. More, not so much technical. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all of the above, some technical, more like creative stuff and trying to come up with new stuff and play the same kind of forms, a blues or something, which I never want to let go of. I always want to have that, but try to find some new stuff that's fresh for me. You know, for anybody who's an improviser, you're not going to be able to find new stuff all the time.
Right.
So you just play the other stuff from the heart, like you absolutely mean it. And that's why B.B. King or Albert King or all those blues guys are such great improvisers. You know, they can play the same stuff, but it comes out fresh every time.
Because like it comes out from each...
From the heart,
authenticity of
and then they may just play the same notes, but they phrase it slightly differently. And Miles used to do that all the time.
I actually read an interview about you online where they talked about your twisted thirds. One of your techniques is to invert the chords and then to play with sort of asymmetrical placement in the bars.
Well, you know, a lot of that comes from Charlie Benacus, who I was studying with, who was a great teacher. And he died recently, incredible piano player, but he taught all instruments. So he got me into really transcribing different people. So I transcribed some McCoy Tyner. I'm doing that now, actually, even on the bus while we're touring. And I hear different, it makes you play different stuff. If you kind of take one idea from one instrument, you can't really play it on your instrument, range-wise or just technically. But you find different phrases that way. Yeah. And kind of, so it's cool. It's really a cool way to go.
So here's a question. What do you do if you're ever not with your guitar in your hand?
I read like those books like John Grisham books.
Or
those kind of, spy novels and that kind of stuff. Or I'm watching the news. I'm a news junkie. I like to find out what's going on in the world all the time.
Have you ever thought of using your music for a cause of some sort?
Yeah, I mean, I do some of that, but not so much. I mean, just sometimes on a small level, not some big thing like that.
You don't have anything you feel fervently about?
I mean, I do tons of stuff like that. You know, I maybe teach, you know, some stuff. Some kids for free or something like that. That kind of stuff I do from time to time, which I want to do more of. I definitely want to do more of that. I love doing that. Mm. Or just teaching more in general. I'm into that. Because I love music and I love being able to play in all these different places. Mm-hmm. It's been great for so many years. But also, I'm on the road a lot.
Yeah.
Lately, a lot. And so it's nice to stay home too, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And do music at home, and so I would do a lot more of that kind of stuff. Yeah. Teaching, and sometimes teaching just to help. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of schools, they're trying to reorganize budgets for states, you know, because mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. a financial thing. Mm-hmm. The first thing that's going is the music department.
I was an inner city school teacher in Boston after I graduated.
So you know.
It was horrible. They couldn't even write their names. I couldn't even get a pencil for them.
Yeah,
I had to bring my own guitar. There was nothing for these kids. It was horrible.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So the Neighborhood was the last album in 2009. And I read a quote about you where you said you sort of view us all as a big neighborhood. And are there any songs on there that had a personal story behind it or a personal meaning for inspiration?
Most of them do when you do them, but you can't even remember. I mean, I can't remember sometimes what they come from. You know, sometimes just a kind of a moment or a couple of moments, or sometimes you miss somebody and the idea comes out. And then you write it later and you forget what the original was. Just you remember the feeling behind it. Sometimes. But one tune this friend of mine who's a really good friend of mine, Roy Holland, his dog died.
Oh.
And he got so sad. He's like a cat from Brooklyn. He's lived in Brooklyn forever. He doesn't seem like the type, and he was crying. And I named it this tune Song for Pepper. It was a little tiny dog but died. And so he really liked that I did that.
But you don't have pets.
We have five cats, me
you have
and
five
Lainey.
Cats?
Lainey loves cats, so we have five cats in our apartment in New York.
I was wondering how you compose and practice.
I just was writing something down tonight that we just jammed in for a second at the sound check when we were just starting.
Okay.
And I just realized there was maybe a tune in there, so I'll just write a little notes and then go back to it when I get a chance to write at home. But I don't do too much writing on the road, but little ideas that come out, I just always ready because you never remember them. You think you're going to remember them later, and you don't. And then when I get home, I try to write something. And when I'm practicing, I'm just practicing, you know, like me and Didier played a couple hours on the bus today.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, you know, I was stopping him and saying, what was that? You know, he's coming from a different place. And I showed him a couple different phrases and stuff, different ideas. But mainly we were just playing. I get so many ideas like that. And I'm practicing at home. For what it's worth, I forget 90% of it. Music is endless.
I mean, it's just
ridiculous.
It's intimidating also.
Yeah.
But it's like you have to take the step where you're just even further away from everything.
Exactly. But it's wonderful. I mean, it's just you can get lost in it. It's such a vast sea. And you just kind of have to figure you got to just go for it. And it's just an endless journey, you know what I mean? You never get there by any means. You don't even scratch the surface. Then it gets you, the more you know, the less you know. But that's the beauty of it too.
I had a question about that actually. Do you actually think consciously at your level, or are you just on intuitive?
I think it's more like Lord talking.
Yeah.
And when you have a phrase or a question asking, or you want to say something in a conversation, generally you're definitely not thinking of each word. Mm-hmm. You know, you've passed that.
Right,
you're
right.
Fluent with the language, so it's similar. It's very similar to that, unless it's some brand new concept you're kind of trying, and then maybe you'll sneak that in a little bit, and that's a little bit more conscious.
And have you seen the landscape of music, and particularly jazz, changing and over the years as you've been?
Sure.
And what would your impressions be?
I think it's all good. I mean, it's just music just grows. The one thing I'm not crazy about is so much YouTube and all that stuff. There's too much of that.
Depersonalized or too...
Yeah, too depersonalized and then too uncontrolled, and they'll take snippets in the middle of a solo or something like that, and you don't even see the context of the whole story. It's just you get two pages even out in the middle of a chapter or something.
Absolutely.
It's a little strange like that. So, but hopefully it'll change, and I think it's weird that people don't get paid and Google makes all the money, you know, that there's no bread in it at all.
Yeah.
They get that, they bought it for $1 billion, the concept of that, and then they don't pay anybody that's on it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And so intellectual property is kind of like, it's like, how do you guard against that, which they're supposedly trying to figure out, but
yeah.
Who knows?
If you had the choice, you wouldn't be on YouTube, right? I mean, you would prefer not
maybe
to, under these
some
circumstances.
Things, maybe yeah. some things, but yeah. no, but it's impossible to, like, take all that stuff off, you know. Yeah. You take off a few things if you want, but it takes a lot of time, so I just let it go.
It's easy to feel misrepresented.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Or, you know, or most people know that that's just where it's at, and it's just a little snippet, and it's not the real deal, mm-hmm. and it's recorded poorly or whatever. But some people actually think it's that's the deal. And yeah. it's given this idea for kids, on top of downloading illegal downloads, that music is for free and it's yeah. going to be harder. I'm cool with it because I'm past the point where I really, you know, I'm kind of established and, mm-hmm. and been very, very lucky to get yeah. that way, you know, because I know a lot of great musicians that can't get their own band out on the road yeah. as much as I've been able to do over the years, and I've been doing it a lot over the years, so I've been very lucky. But there's a lot, it's going to get harder maybe in some ways because of all the immediate access to hearing stuff for no bread. I mean, how are people going to make a living? So we'll see how it plays out. I don't know.
And you played with Harry Lynn Carrington, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and
she's great.
As a woman, and sort of also in the music business, I always wondered, like, have you seen more women appearing in the jazz scene? Or
on my records, a lot.
Of course, <'Cause> they got it.
Kim Thompson was drumming all over the last record, Who Let the Cats Out? Mm-hmm. And now you know where that title comes from.
All right.
Very literally. We have so many cats, we're always letting them out.
It's Lane and, letting them out over there.
Yeah, it's exactly. And, yeah. But Cindy Blackman's on this new record, and Terry Lynn Carrington, mm-hmm. and Esperanza Spalding, and mm-hmm. a whole bunch of beautiful women, and it's great. My wife Lainey is a guitarist, so play all the time, and she's in Africa. She's doing this whole African project now with different African people.
Does she have a homepage too?
She's got more of that. Yeah. I don't even have a computer or a cell phone. I'm the only person left, and she has that, so I kind of, and she's ready to kill me at this point, and so is my manager, because I don't take care of all that stuff myself. Wow. I just kind of, I don't have a car, so I carpool.
Well, you live in New York.
Yeah, so I carpool. I don't have a cell phone, so I cell phone pool. I don't have a computer.
How do you cell phone pool?
You ask somebody else, can you borrow their cell phone? and then I don't have a computer, so I have a computer pool. That's the way I look at it. And then I like to swim, so I go in the pool.
You know what? I totally get it, though. I feel that all that technology, it distracts you from the focus of being in the now and being grounded in the music with your instrument. Maybe I can see how all this
I have enough attention deficit disorder without some help from Bill Gates. But, I mean, that's the way it's going. So, eventually, I guess the thing is to take the technology, which has obviously got incredible upsides to it, and not get swallowed by the downsides, which are a lot.
We'll see how it goes. Last question, are you planning a new recording project or anything in the future, or any other plans after this?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I got some new tunes, but I don't know what's next yet. Who's going to be on it or anything. I was thinking about, like, Marcus Miller and Stanley Clark and maybe and Victor Wooten. You know, different bass players that I work with, which I've done before, kind of, but not with those cats.
Okay.
You know, and I've never played with Stanley. That's somebody we were talking about doing something together, maybe. But I don't know. And Bela Fleck, maybe a little bit with Bela, but really playing a jazz standard with him. Or with DDA, I mean, different. I like the idea of doing stuff with a whole bunch of different people that I like to play with.
From the last
two records I've done it, and it's been really, it's very inspiring for me.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of work to get all those people together.
Yeah.
You know, and then to get them to, they all seem to get into it and learn the demo or whatever, mm-hmm. the music, and by the time you get to recording, because I won't record like with files and everything, I want to do it live.
Oh, it's all live without any editing?
None of that. Well, we edit a little tiny bit, but it's really, I mean, just a little.
You mean you might go in and tweak an intonation or something,
yeah,
it's a great take.
That kind of thing, but basically it is live, and because I don't want the overdub stuff too much. I mean, you want to at least get 99% of it live, or 90% of it anyway. Mm-hmm. If you have to, somebody has to do another solo over the thing, or wants to, you know, that's done all the time.
Right.
But at least you're there at the studio. It's not like you're sending files across the world, you know.
Yeah.
That's to me, that's really depersonalizing. There's nothing like what happens when you're playing on at the moment. Actually, and then if you fix it the moment, you remember what the drummer, it's like you're still in it. You know what I mean?
So you were saying you get them in the studio, and then you want to make sure it's a live take.
Yeah, live
take. But is it hard for you to get them in the studio?
That's the problem. Yeah, logistically, it's hard to get all those people, definitely, in different times. Like, we had to go to, at the time I needed to do the record, I couldn't get Eric Johnson or Steve Vai so to come to New York. They said, well, we can do it, but we can't do it now. So just happened to be their schedules were just different than everybody else's. So I called, so we went out to Texas, me and Lionel Cordue, Lincoln Goins, and Jim Beard, who produced the record and played on it, and we went out to Texas, and then Dave Weckl was already in L.A., because right after that we went to L.A., he played on the thing with Steve Vai, the two tunes with Steve Vai, so we did those in L.A., and Lincoln came out, and Jim, and Lionel came home. And, you know, it was a little bit, you know, kind of to get all those people.
Yeah.
But it's fun as hell.
Yeah.
I mean, because you get so inspired by all those different, different
voices.
Yeah.
Is there anything on the set list that's fresh, new for you?
I'm doing some of the same tunes that I've been playing live, but they sound totally different with a violin.
Okay.
And then we do different things where we just jam.
Okay.
But then just go for it over a vamp or something. Okay. And then Dee has the spot where he plays. And it's totally different with different people. That's what I like, you know. It's that you can play the same stuff, which is pretty open anyway, so it always kind of sounds different.
Okay.
And but with a whole new instrument, it's completely different.